Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I'm Matt.
And today we're discussing timing the stock market.
Joel, you and I got to go on a double date recently with our wives.
It never freaking happens in our wives. We've been kind of busy the past few weeks, and our wives surprised us a little bit at our local brew pub, Wrecking Bar.
That was so sweet, man.
Yeah, like, that was awesome.
We neither of us knew, I don't think, until the very last second. I thought we were just kind of having like a dinner hang at our house.
Yeah.
And I got home, and my wife surprised me like last second. Like, hey, we're doing this. We're going out, all four of us. And we're hiring a babysitter, which we don't normally do because babysitters are crazy expensive.
Yeah, they're kind of expensive.
But it was so worth it, man. It was so awesome.
Were you able to get past that?
Completely.
It took me a second as well. I was just like, oh, we're doing what?
Like, I was like,
babysitter,
cool.
And we're going out.
Is that in the budget? I don't know. But yeah, that was totally worth it. We had a blast.
It's fun to like reconnect as adults. You know, like we've talked about before how we each have a date night. So one night you and Emily will go out, and then I come over and babysit your girls, and vice versa. Next week it'll be me and Kate, and we go out. But it's rare that we all get together, all four adults, and get some good hangs in, you know, have a couple beers and talk about life and kind of catch up without feeling like we have to tend to the children right away. It's nice, man.
Yeah, man. Seriously. So great. Loved it. By the way, I wanted to tell you, so I was like pulling out of work the other day on my bike. And so the weirdest thing about riding my bike to work is that the only place to park at work is this giant, enormous parking garage. And I have to go through three gates.
Wow.
In order to...
Like a normal car?
Yeah, exactly. It's so weird. And I was pulling out the other day and taking my bike down the ramp. And I pulled up next to a guy in his car, one of the sales guys at work, and he said, Joel, I don't know if you heard this, but they actually make cars now. Just like kind of making fun of me.
Was he joking at all, or was he just kind of, was he actually giving you a hard time?
I think a little bit of both. You know, it's kind of one of those jokes that...
Jerk!
Yeah. I kind of wanted to say something. I just sped off because he had to wait for the lift gate to go, but I kind of wanted to say something about the fact that he would be sitting in traffic for quite a while on the way home while I was completely avoiding it, but I did not.
I was hoping that he would have sped off first and then you would have ridden up and just like punched his side view mirror off and just like zoomed off the sidewalk or something like that.
I'm not against a little bit of social disobedience here and there, but that probably wouldn't be cool to a coworker. But I just, you know, I wanted to say that not everyone has to be into biking. That's totally cool. And I know the guy was probably pretty much joking.
Yeah,
so no
certainly.
Offense taken, right? But like, you don't have to be into biking. But you know what? Instead of knocking it, give it a try. Think about it. And that was, again, Matt, that was the first episode we ever recorded because you and I think biking is really important. We think it's important because mm-hmm. It's good for your health. It's good exercise, right? It's good. It gets you out there in your town. There's like so many reasons that biking is good.
The social community aspect of it.
Yeah.
You're more connected with your neighbors. And of course, it saves you money as well. The cost to operate a bike as compared to a car, you can't compare the two.
No contest.
Bikes are way more affordable as far as that goes. Man, I hope he's listening right now, buddy.
Yeah, I wanted to get that out there. You don't have to be a bike lover, but if you're not currently riding a bike or you haven't thought about it in a while and you haven't listened to our first episode, maybe you're a more recent listener to the show. You just kind of started listening. Consider listening to episode one and thinking about how great bikes are, because I got to say, I just kind of felt bad for him that he had to sit in traffic on the way home in this box that like makes your back hurt and stuff like that. And you kind of hate life. And for me, I mean, I was getting fresh air and enjoying this ride home without sitting in traffic. And so just want to let people know, think about listening to episode one if you haven't heard it yet.
What if he was driving to his gym to sit on a bike, a station? Like, what's the fancy exercise bike now? You see guys...
Oh, Peloton?
Yeah. I think it's like folks are getting them out for their houses now. It's like the new... It's like the Bowflex of 2018 or something like that. But, you know, I would be willing to guess that maybe half the people from your building are leaving and maybe going to drive somewhere to go work out.
Yeah.
Going to a gym or going to do CrossFit even, which is great. It's awesome. But still, you're driving there. Why not combine the two and save money and do something that's better for your city?
All right, Matt, beer for the day that you and I are going to be drinking was sent in from a listener. Kevin in North Carolina sent us a few awesome beers that I'm super excited to try. And the one that we're drinking on this episode is Heist Brewery Uber Quenchel Imperial IPA.
Quenchel.
Quenchel. All right, so let's give it a crack.
Hey, Kevin, two things. First of all, you rock. And second, shoot me a message on Twitter to let me know how many beers you sent Joel to make sure he doesn't like save three or four of these in his beer cellar.
Oh, no, dude, this is the only one he sent. Sorry.
Yeah, I believe that. But for real, Kevin, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. We're going to enjoy this as we talk about timing the stock market, but we're going to save our tasting notes for the end. So stick around for that.
That's right, Matt. So timing the stock market. The first thing I thought of, Matt, when I was thinking about timing the stock market, that timing the market is like the equivalent of being a Miami Marlins fan. And
you're going to have to explain the sports to me, buddy, because you know I only watch soccer. So,
all right, I got your back here. So the thing is, the Miami Marlins have been essentially terrible pretty much throughout their whole history. They were an expansion team that launched in like the 90s.
Okay.
And they won a World Series in 1997 and I think in 2003. So they've won two World Series randomly, but they're these like super random occurrences.
Right.
Other than that, they've just been really bad. And they're always, every time they do have a good team, they essentially sell off all their good players the very following year. And so being a Miami Marlins fan, let's say you're jumping on the bandwagon, you don't know when to root for them because you don't know if they're going to be good that year or not. You don't know if you're going to pick that random good year where they're actually going to do something meaningful in the sport, or if you're just going to be along for that terrible ride of many years where they're just completely awful.
Yeah. So what you're saying is that it's completely random and you can't plan for it, right?
I guess what I'm trying to say is you don't know who what the management of the Miami Marlins is going to do. You don't know if it's going to be a good year or it's going to be a bad year.
Yeah.
And so you can't just be a bandwagon fan. And just like with the stock market, right? It's really hard to decide, I'm going to jump in now. Now's the time, right? So we're going to kind of go through a thought process of why timing the market is actually ultimately more harmful to your portfolio. And just like being a Marlins fan, you kind of have to be in it for the long haul through thick and thin to catch those good years, right? And the same thing.
Because you don't know when they're going to show up.
Exactly.
Right.
Stock market, similar kind of thing. And we'll get into more reasons why.
All it is that our friend Patrick got himself a Marlins hat when they rebranded and kind of did that whole sort of South Beach look with the new colors.
Has he burned it yet?
Was that like 5-6 years ago?
Yeah, something like that.
Have they been good since then?
No.
Okay. Because I'm pretty sure I remember that year. Because I watched some baseball back then, but I remember there being reports and shots from the stadium, and it was like completely empty.
Yeah.
Does that sound about right?
Yep. No, okay. Pretty much. They're one of the worst attended teams in all of sports.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yep. So the stock market's actually kind of like the opposite of the Marlins, though, right? Like, so essentially, the stock market does well most years, and there are only a few bad years where the Marlins, right? That's the exact opposite. And the question right now is, well, the stock market is up, and a lot of people are wondering if it's time to sell or, like, it's too hot. Should I get out of the kitchen? And the other question people are asking is, how can I put more money into the stock market because it's at a fever pitch and they can only see things continuing to go up at the same rate?
And so another reason we're talking about this as well is because you'll hear in the news how we're entering this long period of growth that the stock market has seen. And what you've heard is that we're in a bull market where the market has been growing. And so it might be worth mentioning, too, the difference between a bear market and a bull market. A bull market means that stuff's growing, stuff's doing awesome, prices are going up. It's a good time to own stocks in a bull market. Whereas a bear market, it means things are tanking. Things are going down. And the reasoning behind that, too, is they say is that like when a bear fights, like he's got the claws up and he's like swiping down, whereas the bull like lifts up with the horns.
Oh, there we go.
And so that's like, I guess that's how you're supposed to remember it.
That's some nice insight. That's why I keep you around here, buddy. That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Bull market versus bear market.
Yeah. So people have been thinking, right, for a few years now at this point, we've been in this bull market, and Matt just explained to you what that is. It's just essentially this rise in stock prices, and we've been in one of the longest prolonged bull markets in U.S. history.
No, the longest as of a few weeks ago.
Yeah. So it's been like 10 years almost.
Yeah.
9.5 years. And so people are thinking, well, markets can't keep going up like this, can they? So maybe I should sell. Or on the other side, there's this boundless optimism that what goes up must keep going up, which is not scientifically possible. And so the answer is no. Corrections are always inevitable. But the answer to whether or not you can time the market is also no. And so let's go into that. Here's a quote from Peter Lynch, a really savvy investor who worked for Fidelity for a lot of years. He said, "Far more money has been lost by investors preparing for corrections or trying to anticipate corrections than has been lost in corrections themselves." And I think that's really an astute point. So if you are in that place where you're thinking, man, I think things are about to drop, and so I should position myself a little bit differently in order to time the market well so that I can then reallocate after the dip and do even better, right, with my investments. Well, I think Peter Lynch's advice here is something we should all take into account, that preparing for a correction or trying to anticipate one and getting in and out of investments is actually going to be a place that will ultimately hurt us in all likelihood as opposed to help us.
Yeah, man. And Peter Lynch, he is the fund manager for Fidelity, of the most successful mutual fund in the history of the world, where for 13 years...
That's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, that's huge, man. For 13 years, that fund was earning over 30%. So this guy, he knows his stuff. He knows what he's talking about.
And even him, and that's the cool thing. You know, we're going to refer to Peter Lynch and we're going to refer to Warren Buffett in this episode. And those two guys, two of the most successful investors of all time, they seem to say the same thing about timing the market and about a lot of other investing strategies. But in timing the market, they both seem to say, no, it's not a good idea.
That's right, man. You can't time the market. And honestly, that's the opposite of typical behavior. Investors are tempted to buy more as the market rises. They'll do that thinking it'll continue at the same pace. Like we mentioned, there's a sort of a fear of missing out.
FOMO.
effect. And this leads to inopportune buying and selling and almost always ends with a bad result.
So that makes me think of this, Matt. Back in 2009, one of my coworkers was super nervous about the stock market, right? We were pretty much bottom of the barrel. And
oh, yeah. Things have been tanking for years.
Completely. We lost. The stock market had lost 50% of its value.
That's called a bear market.
Yes. And so my coworker was super worried, even though he's relatively young, right? He was in his late 30s and he was nervous that, what am I going to do, man? All my, you know, investment portfolio, you know, it's halfway gone. What should I do? And, you know, I told him, stick with it. You'll be fine. And we'll post a link on in the show notes to a graph that kind of helps you actually see and visualize. It was really helpful for me, the history of bull markets and bear markets. And the bull markets are usually pretty long with lots of growth. And the bear markets are usually pretty short with, you know, certainly an impactful amount of losses, but they don't usually occur for all that long. And the losses aren't nearly as steep as the gains are in the bull market. But so I talked to my friend. I was like, no, listen, stick with it. You'll be fine. This is a long-term play. You know, you shouldn't reallocate any investments right now. He didn't listen. He sold a fair amount of his equity, of his stock investments, and decided to go into cash. And the tough thing about that is you don't know when to put it back in as the stock market's going up. Are we out of the bear market? Are we in the bull market now? I don't know, because it's easy to see now, right, where we what happened. But it's really hard in the middle of it in 2009 to know when to put things back. And so ultimately that came back to bite him, and he missed out on lot of the run-ups of the bull market. And
yeah, if he pulled out at the bottom, I'm sure he was afraid to, like you said, buy in. And so he was probably missing out on huge gains and huge growth over those next couple of years.
Yeah, completely. And just missing out on a few months or even a couple of days in a bull market can have long-term adverse effects on your investment portfolio. And that's why we think timing the market is such a bad idea. It just has these adverse consequences, really, if you dabble in it or try it at all.
Yeah, man, it makes me think of the thing that like mutual funds have to say, where they say like past performance is not indicative of future results, because that's the mindset that consumers, well, I say consumers, but investors, but maybe we are kind of going into it with like a consumer mentality. But you see something tanking or you see something skyrocketing and you think, oh, that's just what's going to always happen, you know? But again, yeah, that's not the case and you can't time it. Warren Buffett's got an awesome quote where he says, my favorite time frame is forever. And that is so incredibly important to keep in mind, man, because we're not just looking for the performance of our portfolio, of our retirement savings to boost in a particular year, or like just this year or just next year, but we're looking at it with a long view. Our goal is for the long term. And what we want to see is our overall portfolio and our overall wealth to increase. But you know, if there's months here and there, and even years where there's a decline, that's not something that you want to try to manipulate and take advantage of necessarily, because you just don't know what the market's going to do.
Yeah, Matt, that's great. So we've kind of established the fact that we think market timing is bad. There's this fear of missing out effect that people get. And so they decide, all right, I'm going to try it, right? I'm going to sell, or I'm going to buy, or I'm going to do something goofy.
Now, let's do it.
Exactly. So if that's not the answer, what is the answer? We'll get into that right after the break.
All right, man, so we're back from the break. So then the next thing that we want to talk about is what to do next. And the number one thing you can do is to not pay attention to the financial news when they're talking about the stock market, because it doesn't matter.
The crazy thing is they want to make it seem like the stock market and what's happening with earnings reports and all these things. They matter. And so you have stay tuned. There's a 24/7 news cycle for investment news now, you know?
Well, that's their product, you know? And I understand that. Like, that's what they have to push. And to them, that's important. However, to you as an investor at home, that is not important. And instead, what we would recommend that you focus on doing is something called dollar cost averaging. If you're not familiar with dollar cost averaging, it is an investment technique of buying a fixed dollar amount of a portfolio investment, so either a stock or a mutual fund or a bond, but to do that on a regular schedule, regardless of the share price. And so what that means then in the long term is that your dollar purchases more shares when prices are low, and then fewer shares when prices are high, effectively averaging out the cost. Pretty straightforward, right?
Yeah, and the great thing, Matt, is that dollar cost averaging actually works out most easily for most people. So for most of us that get a paycheck through an employer, we can have a certain amount taken out of our paycheck every 2 weeks, and we can choose the investments inside of the 401k that we, you know, want our money to go into. And we go into that just a little bit more in previous investment episodes. In particular, retirement investing is simpler than you think.
Yeah.
But dollar cost averaging is actually kind of the default easiest thing for most people to do. Even if you don't have a 401k through your work, setting up a Roth IRA through an individual low-cost brokerage company, then that's pretty simple too. And the easiest way to go about contributions to something like an IRA or Roth IRA is to have it automatically deducted from your checking account once a month. So in effect, your dollar cost averaging, whether you're getting it taken out of your paycheck or whether you're getting it taken out of your checking account once a month, you're essentially doing that. You're buying shares at the same time every month or every 2 weeks. And so there's no need to overthink it. Dollar cost averaging right there.
Yeah, by default, right? Definitely one of the benefits of being employed by the man is having a steady paycheck. One huge downside being self-employed is that with the income being variable, I can't do that because we might have, well, with my work being more seasonal, there's periods of time, there's months where I'm, you know, we're raking it in, and there's periods of time where I don't have hardly any money at all. And so it wouldn't really work out if I had an auto draft set up. But what I do know is that our goal for the year for retirement giving is $11,000, $5,500 each. And so I know that if I take that 11 grand and divide it out by 12 months, that's $916 that we are setting aside. And but we still have to manually do that. That's the big downside, right? It's more of a mental sort of step.
Yeah, there's something about actually having to make that purchase, right? As opposed to it automatically happening. There's a mental hurdle there that you have to overcome. Somebody who has a 401k that they automatically contribute to via their employer, they don't have to overcome that mental hurdle.
Exactly.
They just have to do it once, essentially set it up and make sure that, you know, they're contributing enough to get at least the match and hopefully more. And after that, it's done, right?
Yeah.
It just happens every 2 weeks and they don't really have to think about it. That is the beautiful thing of the 401k. And I feel bad for people that are self-employed. It takes a little more discipline to make it happen, you know?
Yeah, there's a slight temptation there to think, oh, maybe I should hold off. Things do seem kind of crazy right now. You know, like there's, like you said, there's that hurdle. Yeah, and it just kind of sucks.
So let's talk about the four biggest reasons, the potential screw-ups that you can make in trying to time the market. The first mistake that you can make is when you try to time the market, you have to get it right not just once, but twice. And that's really difficult. Let's say you've got $100,000 in your 401k right now, and you say, man, it looks really hot. I think I'm going to bet on the stock market not doing well over the next year. And you decide to put all your holdings into cash. Well, let's say the stock market does have a little bit of a decline. It's really hard to know when you're at the apex or the trough of a market. And so trying to time it just once, but that's really hard to do. But trying to time it well twice, man, that's even harder.
That's right, Joel. Secondly, missing out on certain days, the few days where the stock market does make some major gains, you could miss out on a huge amount of growth in your portfolio. The market doesn't just gradually increase over the course of the year. You know, it's not slow and steady. There's huge ups and there's huge downs a lot of times over the course of the year. And if you're sitting out during those few days where there are pretty huge spikes, you're going to be missing out, like I said, on a lot of growth.
Yeah. I mean, if you're out of the market for just 10 days out of the year, the 10 days out of that year that have the highest gains, you could actually end up losing money that year in the stock market.
Like if you had the worst timing in the entire world, right?
Right.
I feel bad for that guy.
Exactly. Yeah. You're the dude who backed out on the day before the spike and then you put your money back in and then it went, you know, it's just a terrible idea.
You're doing everything wrong, man. Stop.
Right. It's just amazing though that so much of the progress of the stock market happens on so few days during the year. And so if you decide that you're going to be cute and try to time the stock market, Well, if you miss out on one or two of those days, well, that could be a big loser for you and actually have really long-term implications because of the way money works over time.
And plus, you'll just feel like a dummy.
Exactly.
And the third point, Joel, is somewhat related to missing out on the gains, but the opportunity cost that's associated with that. And so the S&P goes up roughly 2 out of every 3 years. And so if you have sold at what you suppose is the top and you're sitting there with cash, you want it to be liquid for some reason, you are losing out. You're missing out on those gains, those 2 out of 3 years. The thing is that you don't know when those 2 of the 3 years are going to be. And so to think that you can time it and that you know exactly when the market's either going to plateau or when it's going to start dipping again, you're fooling yourself.
It's almost like thinking that just because roulette wheel fell on red 8 times in a row, that it's going to be black the next time, right? There's still a 50-50 yeah. chance each time. And investing in the stock market is not gambling. You're
Maybe we should have said that at the very beginning.
Yeah. It's not gambling. You're investing in American capitalism. You're investing in American companies. So it's not gambling. But in the same vein, you don't really know where the economy as a whole is going. None of us do. None of us are really smart enough to say, you know what, next year I think is going to be a bad year for American capitalism as a whole. And we don't really know the things that are actually going to trigger a decline in the stock market. We can continue to see another bull market for 2 or 3 more years. We just don't really know. But yep. then all of a sudden, something could happen in regards to diplomacy or tax law or something else that's like super wonky that I don't even understand.
Yeah, or that we have zero control over.
Completely. Obviously. Yeah, and so those kind of things can happen and trigger a bull market. But I don't know when that's going to be. I don't know what the trigger is going to be. And so I just know what history looks like with the stock market. And I just see that the opportunity cost of potentially sitting out, thinking that I know better and can time the market, is actually a fool's errand.
I mean, I think it's a good point that you brought up gambling, because on the flip side of the coin, timing the market is gambling. It is speculation because you have no clue. I loved what you said about investing in the stock market is investing in our country, essentially. Like, you believe in the companies and the ingenuity and the progress of our nation. And we have ups and downs as a country, but overall we're optimistic and we believe that we've got great things ahead of us. And that's what you invest in when you invest in the stock market.
Yeah, completely. Last thing on potential screw-ups when trying to time the market. Timing the market can lead to tax triggers. So let's say that you are not inside of a retirement account, but you're investing in a brokerage account. If you buy and sell stocks inside of a brokerage account, those moves can trigger tax consequences. Whatever vehicle you're using to invest, make sure you know the tax consequences of buying or selling stocks and bonds inside of that, because rebalancing, selling, and buying can actually end up generating a tax bill for you at the end of the year that you weren't expecting.
That's right, man. And taxes suck. We're going to take a quick break, but right after that, we're going to touch on how we like to invest in the stock market. So we're back from the break, and now let's talk about how we invest. A more passive approach is better for your money. It's better for your portfolio, and it's way, way easier. Try to imagine trying to time the market and all the time and energy that goes into that versus spending that time with your family instead. Or if you want to be productive, take that time and actually build something. You know, like we just talked about side hustles a couple episodes ago. Pursue something that you're passionate about, something that you could see scale, where you're helping people and that you're able to provide a service for people. That's something I would much rather spend my time on versus sort of staring at the charts and thinking, okay, is it time to sell? Is it time to buy? Who the heck knows?
Yeah, and that's the thing, Matt. We don't know, right? And Warren Buffett, Peter Lynch, these investors that are essentially like the Barry Bonds and Hank Aaron of investing. Sorry, another sports reference.
I know those guys.
Okay, all right, good.
Say Babe Ruth.
And Babe Ruth, too.
Oh, yep. Yep. Old Babe Ruth and Mickey Mantle.
There we go. Yeah, so these guys are essentially, you know, the MVPs in the Hall of Fame of investing. And they're saying, don't time the market. They're saying, do as I say, not as I do.
Well, because they know how unique they are. And I think that's why small-time investors like us, right, can have a hard time just sticking with dollar cost averaging, where you're just sort of following a schedule, or you're not even thinking about it. Like you said earlier, you set it and forget it. Or you just follow this monthly schedule where you know that you're setting aside this much money to invest. The reason that's not appealing is because it's not appealing, right? It's just not exciting. It's not at all sexy.
You don't strike it rich quick like that, right?
Yeah, there's no excitement at all, and it's just boring and dull. And that kind of flies in the face of the American mindset of, I'm going to start this new company. I'm going to have a IPO, just all these sort of fancy financial things that you think, oh, well, that's how you get rich. Oh, real estate. You know, like we talk about real estate a good bit, but it's not in the sort of speculation, get rich quick sort of mentality. And I think that's why dollar cost averaging suffers, is because it just doesn't seem like this fun thing to do, because it's not.
It's not cool.
It's not cool. It's not cool at all. And so much of America is the sort of rugged cowboy of like, I'm going to figure this out on my own, you know, like going into it with that mentality.
What if we could get like Colin Kaepernick to do a commercial for dollar cost averaging? Would that help maybe make it cool? I don't know. We'll just say, just do it. Dollar cost average. Just do it. Right? Yeah. I mean, for me too, one of the best reasons for dollar cost averaging is that it's easy and I'm kind of lazy. And so the fact that I can set it up once and just kind of let it go, right? Start investing. It keeps going. Money gets deducted from my paycheck and from my checking account every month or every 2 weeks, and it's gone. Like, there's something really nice about that, about not having to actually do much myself. And for me, as a slightly lazy dude, I really enjoy that. I really like not having to think about it. And I think like that's another really good reason for people to consider this. Do it the easy way. I love the idea that you can be building wealth over the long haul without actually taking much action, right?
Without actively having to think about it and without it taking up mental space. Yeah, this is something we've talked about, man. Like how the more responsibility we have, the more limited bandwidth that we have. At least me, you know, I'm speaking for myself for sure, but I've just got so many other sort of things going on to think that like, okay, I also now have to keep in mind what the stock market's doing and what the financial news outlets are saying. These aren't things that I need to be concerned with, you know, and my energy and my efforts and my time are much better spent doing other things, especially the things that only I can do, like be a father or a husband, you know?
I'll take care of your kids.
Oh, I know you will.
Yeah, man. I think too, if we've been watching CNBC or these financial channels, reading some of these financial outlets enough, we start to think that there are discernible patterns that we can make out in the stock market. And we start to think that we know more than we actually do. And timing the market can often be an emotional decision that clouds good judgment. And ultimately, the fact is, slow and steady wins the race. And it's way easier. And I love that.
Yeah, dude, what's not to like? It's better results and easier. I love it.
All right, Matt, back to the beer.
Yeah, again, this is Heist Brewery. Have you ever been up to Charlotte to visit any breweries before? I don't know what their beer scene's like up there.
No, they actually have a decent spot in the airport where you can buy some beers. And so I do remember like snagging a can of something last time I was in the Charlotte airport. But
oh, really?
I've never actually been to Charlotte to do some brewery tour. So I was really, really excited that Kevin from Charlotte ended up sending us some of these beers. And man, this Heist Brewing Double IPA was really, really good.
Yeah, man, it's a bigger beer at 8.2%. It's got that hazy New England style to it. So it's got that sort of sharp hop character that I love so much. But at the same time, it doesn't finish out too bitter because it's kind of got that juicy, juicy freshness to it. And it's, yeah, most definitely my favorite IPA style right now. Maybe even my favorite beer style at all right now.
I feel like it's the beer style of which I could drink the most, every night.
The most of?
Yeah,
exactly.
I think it's probably not my favorite overall beer style, because on those occasions where I have one of my favorite styles that's hard to come by, I love it. But I could drink, you know, one of beer like this every night and not get tired of it. This one was no exception. It was really good. And if they were close to me, I would totally add it to my weekly lineup of hazy IPAs.
Man, most definitely. Thanks a lot, Kevin. We appreciate it, man.
All right, Matt. Final thoughts on timing the stock market. I just got to say, there's been so many articles because of this raging bull market we've had.
Yeah, it's historic. It's history right now. We're in the longest bull market that there has ever been. So there's good reason to pay attention to it.
And everyone's got an opinion. Everyone's got a reason to buy or a reason to sell. And that's kind of why we felt the need to make this episode. Because if you're listening to the financial news and the opinions of people on TV, then you might decide now's the time either to buy more stock or to sell what you've got. And the answer to that is no. You shouldn't be timing the stock market. It's a bad idea for a lot of reasons.
Instead, you want to be focusing on dollar cost averaging. And the reason for this is because you can't predict the market. And so, for instance, if the market is high, you might think that you should go ahead and sell because you want to buy low and sell high, right? However, what if the market continues to rise? You'd be missing out on all of that. You can't predict the market.
So the easy approach is a passive approach where you set it and forget it, where you make your contributions a recurring thing, whether it's in your 401k through your employer's paycheck every 2 weeks, or you have a recurring deduction from your checking account into an IRA. Either way, the passive approach is the best because you'll be dollar cost averaging by default and you won't be tempted to be swayed by the financial news and make an emotional decision that could impact your long-term wealth building in a major way. Slow and steady wins the race.
That's right, man.
All right, everyone. Thanks so much for listening. Our home on the web is howtomoney.com.
And if you are listening right now and you like what you hear and have found this podcast helpful, please let us know. You can give us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever it is that you are listening to your podcast. And definitely be sure to subscribe. All right, Joel, until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.